Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be discussing a subject that you may have some very strong feelings about, but my guest today, Rosemary Coates, is going to be giving us some insights in doing business with China, 42 rules for sourcing and manufacturing in China. All is not wonderful and glamorous when it comes to doing this, but this is a major economy in today's world, and we are going to be finding out the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful about this particular aspect of business. Rosemary, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, you are a global supply chain consultant, and you're the president of Blue Silk Consulting. You're located out of Silicon Valley. And you've been involved in overseas projects in China, Korea, Japan, and Singapore for over 20 years. And many people like to confer with you because you are so knowledgeable about international trade, how to do the operations, what's involved, and the logistics relating to it, which can be quite intimidating when you first become exposed to it, and as with many aspects of business, they're always changing. Rosemary, you had an interesting foreword in your book by Tex Texan, who is the CEO of ZenCraft out of Silicon Valley. He said when he first went to China, he went to Pudong in 1993, and this is an economic development zone that's outside of Shanghai. He said not too much was going on. Today, Pudong's gross or GDP is greater than the United States, $50 billion. Now, right there, that makes someone go, what? How could this possibly be? Tell us about Tex and how the two of you have come to know each other and a little bit of his background and what all is involved with working in China.
Okay. Tex is a friend of mine, and he is a software architect. He does internationalization and software. And so we had some common interests on the international side. With respect to Pudong, Pudong was a kind of a marshland on the other side of the Huangpo River in Shanghai forever until the 90s. And China decided to develop the property, to industrialize it. And today, in fact, I was just there in April. Today, it's full of high rises. It's the picture that you usually see of Shanghai with the Pearl Tower, the funny shaped tower, looks like a pearl on top. And the high rises in the background. That's Pudong today. So in 25 years, they went from marshlands to this skyline that looks sort of like Manhattan. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of amazing. It's very amazing. And then China actually passed Japan this past week in terms of the size of the economy. So it is now number two in the world and probably will overtake the U.S. in terms of the economy, the size of the economy, within the next 5 to 7 years.
Yes, that has been predicted for, I think, a good period, but it's really coming up to the forefront. Now, he brought out something in his foreword in your book. He said, we have to get rid of this concept that Chinese factories are operating on cheap labor alone. And he toured a factory that you were able to bring him into, and he said this one factory went in, made parts for high-tech and biotech clients using automation and clean room environments for precision and purity. And this company had long-range visions, and it was not relying on cheap labor to succeed. So there are many myths that I call them myths because at one time they might have been a factor, but they're no longer a factor today. Now, that's not on all levels, but this he felt that to ignore China is to ignore opportunity. Why?
Yeah, well, that particular factory is called Peak Plastics, and they're a U.S. company traded on the U.S. Stock Exchange, but they have always manufactured in China. And so I was there helping a client locate some plastics manufacturing, and so I happened to tour that factory, and Tex was there also. So we looked around together, and he was of the impression, which I think is pretty common in America, that you move to China and manufacture there strictly for low-cost labor. But, you know, that's really not the case anymore. I mean, certainly low-cost labor is a factor. But in addition to that, Chinese manufacturing has really come up the food chain. And so now there are, significant factories that are building all kinds of technical things, advanced technologies, advanced equipment. So in this particular case, the plastics factory had CAD-CAM, which is an engineering design approach and tool set for manufacturing. And they had a group of engineers in a big room that were doing modeling on the CAD-CAM system. They did have a clean room environment. It was really interesting. They were making some products for medical devices, and so they had to have a sterile environment for that. Plus, they were making a lot of equipment for semiconductor manufacturing. So they were actually producing plastic trays and so forth that were then used in semiconductor manufacturing throughout Asia. So, precision plastics, both molds and extrusions. There are plenty of other manufacturing companies throughout China that are also making advanced technologies, not just, assembling laptop computers or iPods or iPhones, but making medical devices, automobiles, industrial equipment, all kinds of sophisticated things. So the manufacturing environment is not just about low-cost labor. It's very sophisticated these days. And it's truly an economic benefit if you were manufacturing to move to a low-cost environment like that.
Now, let me ask you a question. This is something that I've heard people pose, let me ask you this. When we are importing products from China, there is an understanding that they do not have to meet certain requirements of standards that American manufacturers are required to produce. Is that a misconception? In other words, we import things from China. They are not required to meet certain standards if we, as manufacturers in the United States, we have to meet certain requirements. If we don't, then we can be put out of business. Is that still the same, or is that changing?
That's partially true. So importing into the United States, you have to go through customs and meet with the requirements that are imposed by the Consumer Product Safety Commission for toys, for example, the FDA. So it's U.S. regulations that need to be met in order to import and sell into the United States. Where I think there's a difference in standards is in the working environments in China. So in the U.S. we have OSHA requirements and a lot of heavy safety and so forth. In China, they also have safety requirements. There's no question about that. But there aren't the same level of standards and strict implementation of things as we would find in the U.S. So, there's some difference there, and that contributes to, obviously, the cost of a product as well. However, things are changing. I mean, stuff changes in China in a matter of days. I had one of the examples I used in the book. I interviewed a gentleman who was working for a Silicon Valley manufacturer at the time, and he went to a manufacturing area in Suzhou, which is outside of Shanghai, And he was trying to find directions to the factory, and so they called the factory, and the factory manager told him to drive to the end of the road and turn left, and it was the new factory on the left. So he did that. They had a nice visit. About 3 months later, he came back and tried to do the same thing, and the road had been built 10 miles farther, and there were factories on both sides of the street. So, you know, things change so fast in China that, you know, every time you go there, it's almost a different experience. And that is, you know, related both to the infrastructure, the building of roads and ports and airports, trains and so forth, but it's also related to the factory environment and the ways the factories are evolving into higher levels of manufacturing and organization.
There are some comments that you make about China that it was just last week I was making a comment with one of the guests that I had. You bring a point out in your book that China is America's fastest growing export market. The potential market to sell goods and services in China is phenomenal. The Chinese middle class is rapidly expanding, and they want Western goods. Also, businesses involved in exporting, both large and small, will survive downturns in the economy much better than those businesses that are strictly domestic. I think that's pretty much the second statement, I think, is something that anybody that is in business has a good understanding of if they keep on top of that. But I so agree with you that the exporting opportunity for the American market is phenomenal. Why do you think that it is so hard for the American manufacturing base here to catch on to that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know, but you know, every time I have an opportunity, I encourage people to take a step up and start thinking globally. So it's no longer about, you know, building a product in the U.S. and selling it here and, you know, bumbling along thinking that the U.S. is the marketplace. The world is the marketplace. So if products are designed and manufactured in the U.S., you certainly want to target China as a potential place to sell your products, or Korea or Europe or wherever. I mean, you really have to think globally about your markets. China, you're right. China has the fastest growing middle class of any place in the world. Today, they have 350 million people that are considered middle class. And, the whole population of the United States is 350 million people. So they have that many people just in the middle class, and it's growing at double digit rate every year. So it will become the target market for everyone in the world to sell goods to. Now, just one other comment. I mean, that has to do with the kind of industrial revolution that China is going through right now. So just as America did 120 years ago, China is going through their own industrial revolution, where the rural people, the people that are stuck in abject poverty, are moving to the coastal towns, working in factories, and they're coming up in their ability to have money, to earn money, and spend money. So, you know, they're coming up in the world. They're coming up into the middle class. And when they get there, they're going to start demanding more goods and services, just as America did 100 years ago. So now, you know, people in China want to have houses. They want to remodel their kitchens. They want to drive cars. They want better shoes and clothes and TVs and iPods, and everything that we want is where they're headed. So, you know, it's a huge market for us to sell into.
One of the positive, when America went through the Industrial Revolution, we had our learning pains 150 years ago, 200 years ago. I mean, we had to evolve, and we especially sped up after the Second World War. We were able to experience a boom on so many different levels. Our middle class really grew, doing exactly what the Chinese are doing today. Exactly. We wanted our houses, you know, people had a better way of life, and prosperity just overflowed. What I find fascinating is that they have not yet gotten to the position, according to your book, a standardization or consistency. It's like here in the United States, when you put in plumbing or you go to buy certain parts, certain things, we have variables, but there were those standards that were imposed so that there could be a consistency in result. Is that beginning to level out in China? Are they following a lot of our previous patternings, in fact, to be where we are?
Yeah, oh, definitely. So as they industrialize, standards are certainly something that they're looking for. So, part of the understanding is knowing a little bit about the history of China. So China was under imperial rule until 1912 or 1913, when the last emperor of China was escorted out of the Forbidden City. And from there, you know, they had some revolutions, they had a lot of civil war and so forth. It really didn't stabilize the government until about 1950, somewhere in there. So then it was Mao Zedong who reigned until about 1976, and that was a real crazy time with the Cultural Revolution and the Great Leap Forward and different components of his ability to constantly revolutionize. But, you know, once he was gone, he died in 1976, the government stabilized and started really emphasizing the economic development. And that's when things took off. But, you know, from 1976 until now, you know, it's just 35 years. And so really the laws have only been in place that long. So they're very immature. And yes, you know, there's standards and laws and so forth that are on the books, but there's very little precedent in terms of law, case trials, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a very immature, almost cowboyish sort of environment that you have to deal with. And that translates into, you know, not so many standards, and difficulty if you ever get into a legal problem in China with a contractor, that kind of thing. A lot of difficulty in trying to get through the legal system because there's just, you know, there just isn't a lot of established protocol or consistent body of law to lean back on.
That, and I think you put it very succinctly in your book, there aren't any rules, really.
Yeah, really, there's laws and so forth that are, you know, there's a saying that the laws are made in Beijing and then Canton does whatever it wants. So Canton is the area of southern China, just east and north of Hong Kong, and it's the Pearl River Delta, and it's also referred to as the factory of the world. It's, you know, mile after mile after mile after mile of factories, and they make everything from flip-flops to automobile parts. There's a whole city, contract manufacturer called Foxconn that's dedicated to making Apple products. So Apple outsources all of their manufacturing to Foxconn. So, you know, the Apple products are all made there in this huge city. I read just the other day that they employ about 200,000 people just in that one factory area. So it's a small city where people live and eat and work and sleep, and, you know, it's the whole thing. So, I mean, the kind of industrialization in southern China has taken place because there are guidelines, but not a lot of heavy rules. So there are many, many entrepreneurs and capitalist-thinking people there that are building factories and doing helping and supporting industrialization in all different kinds of ways. So, you know, like I said, the laws, you know, made in Beijing, but then sort of Canton, the Guangdong, Dongguan, Shenzhen area sort of do what they want.
China's culture is centuries and centuries old, thousands and thousands of years old, and there have been particular cultural protocols that have been very consistent in their environment during those thousands of years, good, bad, or indifferent. And that is something that has to definitely be considered. And this is something, as a consultant, that you make a point of teaching people, because just to go in with a blazing, you know, guns like a Clint Eastwood special is not going to work in China. They'll be very, very courteous, but this is part of their culture. They've been invaded so many times, and they've been at war so many hundreds and hundreds of times among themselves as well as with other countries, that I remember reading years ago that they learned you're very courteous to your enemies, you absorb them, and then they become a part of you, and you've conquered them. I mean, it was just this type of philosophy, and Confucianism and various aspects go into it. They're a very complex, multi-level type of thinking. But I was really impressed with the information you gave relative to employees, of the Chinese employees, that they often will be afraid of making suggestions. And this is something that manufacturers, when they are wanting to go over there, here in America, if someone said, hey, boss, hey, your screws are too short. You need to have an extra thread on it for, you know, an eighth of an inch or whatever. Boss says, oh, okay, let's see what we're going to do. That's not the way it is there. They're not necessarily going to do that. Am I correct?
Right. Yes, absolutely correct. So Confucianism is a philosophy. It's not a religion. It's a philosophy, and it's a set of precepts in how you live in the world. So, for example, children are taught Confucianism in elementary school, and there are things like respect authority. Never challenge someone in public. Treat each other equally. So, you know, these are a lot of precepts that they are taught from a very, very young age and are embraced throughout Chinese culture. So, for example, in a factory environment, we do a lot of different kind of methodologies in the West. We have lean manufacturing and total quality management, Six Sigma, and there are all different programs that address quality issues and continuous improvement. In China, if you were to try to deploy some of that thinking, one of the important aspects of it is to, as you said, bring things up where quality is a problem or quality is an issue. In China, if you were to do that in a factory environment, it would send the message that the supervisor was not doing his or her job, and therefore the supervisor would lose face. And that's a very important concept. You would never criticize an authority figure or a supervisor in public. And so if there's a quality problem, nobody will bring it up. And certainly there isn't a lot of participation in programs like Lean Manufacturing or Six Sigma as a result. So, I've dealt with some Western business people that go over, think they're going to solve quality problems or improve the way something is manufactured, and they go, enthusiastically to teach a class, and they'll teach a two-day class on lean manufacturing techniques, and then nobody will do anything. So, the Chinese will listen and learn, but it's just culturally counter to the way they would think, and they would never embarrass someone in public. It just wouldn't be done. So, I've had Western manufacturers that are so frustrated because they can't get their programs instituted, and it's because there's cultural resistance. The other thing is, too, many of the factory workers are paid on piecework, so how many things they manufacture a day or sew a day or that sort of thing. Those kind of programs take you away from the workplace, even for an hour for a meeting. And, that, when you're only making 50 cents an hour, it's just not something people are going to love to do, to go to a meeting. So, there's another issue there where people won't volunteer. Mm-hmm. And then the third aspect is there is a fundamental belief. Chinese believe that everyone's born connected. In the West, we think everyone's born equal. In China, the belief is that everyone is born connected, and that's a finite difference. When everyone is connected, they want to be everyone on the same level, and no one that pops up and takes control, or, very few people would embrace kind of a leadership or breakthrough thinking. In China, most of the population wants to just fit in. And so in a factory environment, if, you have an issue or a quality problem or whatever, people are just not likely to speak up. It just culturally wouldn't be done. Mm-hmm. So you have to know and understand those kind of things, the rules about that, what's happening with the culture, so that when you go there and you're manufacturing or you're reviewing a plant or, you're seeing things for the first time, you have to understand it through the lens of Chinese thinking. Really, really important. Otherwise, you just won't be successful.
Well, I know we're just about out of time. You go into so many different facets in your book, and I really appreciate how you have efficiently condensed your information so that you get to the point. You talk about building green factories in your book, how women can do very well in China with a business there, because women are treated as equals, where for so many centuries they weren't. Today they are. There are so many factors that you bring forth that I think for anyone that is interested maybe in making a product here in the United States and exporting it overseas, being educated and informed allows us to see how opportunity is knocking at our door, and if we're willing to make our own shifts and be productive and open and receptive to concepts instead of bellyaching like I hear so many people do, then we have an opportunity that can serve our bottom line economically very, very well. And I think we can also be enriched from the wonderful cultural aspects that the Chinese have to offer to us. And their culture is just, their history is replete with phenomenal stories that are just absolutely amazing. And they're discovering more and more about it every day. Rosemary, your book, 42 Rules for Sourcing and Manufacturing in China, is much more than what the title says, and I think it makes for a very informative read. Now, you have two websites. One is BlueSilkConsultingAds.com, I believe. I may have that incorrect. Give us your website.
Just a word about Blue Silk Consulting. The company was named Blue Silk because I was looking for something that was kind of Chinese sounding. So, of course, the Silk Road or Silk. And blue is the color of wisdom in China. So, therefore, Blue Silk. And so the website is www.bluesilkconsulting.com. And you can click on a link there and buy the book on Amazon, or you can go directly to Amazon and search on my name, Rosemary Coates. And then the other website, I'm teaching a two-day class on sourcing and manufacturing in China on September 16th and 17th. And the website for that class is
globalsupplychainuniversity.com. Globalsupplychainuniversity.com. Well, Rosemary, right. You've done a very nice book here that I think is really quite insightful. And I'm sharing it with some people that I know that are in manufacturing. And if they keep their mind and attitudes open, I think it'll benefit them tremendously, because I agree with you. It is a market that is ready to buy. It is a market that really will appreciate good quality and will like having those products that they cannot supply for themselves. That's very good. Rosemary Coates, her book, 42 Rules for Sourcing and Manufacturing in China. Fascinating read. We'll be back in just a moment. Again, thank you, Rosemary, for being my guest. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. Four out of the last eight Nobel Prizes in Physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hello and welcome. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open, and if you'd like to call me and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here is the toll-free telephone number worldwide that you can use. It's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I really want to just say something about different cultures. Today I had the wonderful opportunity of chatting with a woman from Peru. She is from the area Lake Titicaca. She comes from a very, very old tribe. She has been educated Western-wise to a degree. And she was here visiting in the United States, and a friend called me and said, oh, Donna, is there a chance we could just come by and could visit you? So I had the wonderful opportunity, my husband and I both did, of entertaining her and her friends, and it was really fascinating. There are so many areas in this world that people, cultures, have knowledge and understanding that too many times historically has been ignored. We've all heard of the Spaniards when they went and met the Incas and the Mayas and all kinds of cultures. They just slaughtered people. If there were any kind of forms of information or healing techniques, they all thought it was the work of the devil, and so they murdered everybody they could. They put people into servitude. Well, that has gone on in many cultures throughout the world, and I don't condone any of it. I think it's appalling. But today's world is a little bit different. We have an opportunity, if we're willing to learn from cultures that have been around for a long time, just like this lady's particular tribe. It's considered one of the oldest cultures in the world. And she said they've lived in the mountains, and among her people, they talk about how the preservation of potatoes and the growth of particular potato species were developed centuries ago. And they have healing techniques that they utilize. And she talked about the cacao bean and the cacao leaf. And I was not aware that there are 200 varieties of this leaf. And out of that, only three, out of the 200 varieties, only three have a particular molecule that can contribute to what is considered cocaine. And she said the amount that has to be used to make it is just phenomenal. She was talking about how there are countries in the world that are importing tons of these leaves. And she said among our people, they've never ever been abused, but it's one of the finest healing food on the planet. Now here we are talking with this woman who's thousands of miles away from home, who has been educated by her own people in medicinal applications of herbs, etc. And she said the American people have no clue about this. They hear things about travel programs about how, boy, this is addicting and so on and so forth. She said it's not. It is not. She said it is. There are this many varieties, and we know about the different varieties, and we know how medicinally they can be utilized. And when people go in to the Andes, it's encouraged for them to have the coca bean or the leaf, the coca leaf, tea, because it keeps you from getting sick. And she said, our people have used it for centuries, and it's a very healing plant. And I thought, wow, this is really amazing. 200 varieties? Who knew? Well, apparently a few people do know about it in the world, but the average individual doesn't. And how many times have we wanted to know about natural things that can enhance our lives and can help us be well? These are things that when you learn them from different individuals, and I'm hoping to have more time with her. She's going to be coming back into the country in January, and perhaps I will be able to have her as a guest on the show where we can chat about her country's culture and some of the medicinal things that she shares with people. But she's totally dedicated to being a healer, and she learned from her grandmother certain techniques. Her mother was a midwife, so she said there were many things I was exposed to when I was growing up, and they are a very resilient kind of people, and they live in a world that some of us might consider very primitive compared to our standards. But she said, not really. We live differently. But she said, we have good health, and there's a lot of things that we really appreciate. But they also have a knowledge, just like the Chinese, through thousands of years, have learned certain things about medicinal applications that we're finding to be very valid today. And I just think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful when we can share our knowledge, when we can bring along the best of what we have. Whether it is Peruvian understanding from a tribe up at Lake Titicaca, or whether it is with the Chinese, whether it is Aborigines in Australia, whenever we can grow and expand in our understanding so that we can make our lives and the lives of others better, I think we will come a long, long way. And it's very exciting. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. If you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then after that, let me tell you what I perceive. And, of course, you're welcome to ask me a question. If you're concerned about preventing someone from using your cell phone, let's face it. Cell phones are just not cell phones. We have so many different applications on cell phones, and some people contain all of their personal information on the cell phone. That is something you really want to make sure that nobody can get into. Now, there are a lot of scammers out there. You know, we hear about these stories every once in a while. I shared one with you yesterday. They'd love to get a hold of your mobile phone. In fact, they'll be able to access sensitive information. If you've used your phone to access your bank account, etc., well, they will be able to get to it. Now, there are some experts that are advising us to treat our phones like a computer. That means setting up passwords and clearing the cache and cookies from your mobile web browser. That's very, very important. Also, don't program the word home into your phone list. Do not put that down. They'll know exactly how to reach you and how to locate you. If you lose your cell phone, you are going to find it's not going to be a happy experience. Thieves could use the information to figure out where you live and even more. So check with your local cell phone company. Also, if they have a fraud department, find out what you do to protect yourself. And don't forget, you have to do the same thing with your printers that you might have in your office or in your home. They're computers. Anything that is computerized, you need to make sure that if you're going to get rid of your cell phone or if you're going to get rid of a printer or any computer, you get in and you smash the hard drive section, because people will be able to go in and get everything, if it's a printer, everything and anything you've ever scanned, ever printed, all of that is all recorded inside your happy, handy-dandy printer. And the same thing with your cell phone. There are records there. There's all kinds of information. Do not assume that others cannot access it, because they can. So it is a point of security that I really wanted to bring down to you, because, or bring to you, I should say, because if we don't know, how are we going to be able to protect ourselves? And don't assume that you won't be hit, because the way things are going anymore, the fraud is increasing at such a phenomenal rate that we need to change our thinking. And also, there need to be different applications for security that are going to do a better job than what they do. Now, let's talk about getting the cheapest price. If you want to find the best value for the dollars that you're going to be spending on a particular product, here are a few tips. The retailer is a good place to go if you want to find out about sales, but also check with your credit card company. You might, because you make your purchases with plastic, some of the credit card companies offer complimentary extensions on price adjustments, and you might find a typical two-week deadline might be up to 2 months, giving you more time to watch for markdowns and file a claim to get your money back if you want to do that. But also, you want to track your markdowns on the internet. And I was surprised to find out that there is a site, well, actually there's two, priceprotector.com or pricegrabber.com, priceprotector.com or pricegrabber.com. They will, if you list the item you're interested in price, they'll let you know when it goes on sale. If you say, sorry, I don't want to pay $400 for this, they'll let you know when it goes on sale. You'll be able to watch it. And if you're lucky, maybe you'll get it for $100 instead of $400. Also, they say the major sales are held over weekends, and most of the marking down on sales items are done on a Friday. So try to schedule your shopping for Friday, and you'll be able to jump on any price matches for items you've already purchased before the time period for adjustment expires. You'll also be the first one to cash in on brand new markdowns. There's another tip I'd like to share with you. If you're in a regular store, a retail store, and you get to know the salespeople, let's say you have a favorite store like Nordstrom's or whatever, Macy's, that you like to shop at. If you get to know the clerks, often when you go in, they'll let you know if something's coming up, and they might give you the sales price in advance. That's happened to me. So don't be afraid to cultivate the association with good salespeople. And they let you know. It's happened with me more than once. And you can always say, yes, I can, or no, I can't afford it, whatever it may be. This is Donna Sebo taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, well, your phone line is still open, 888-815-9756, and we'll be sharing some more of the things with you.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone number, if you'd like to give me a buzz, is 888-815-9756. Now, I want to mention something to you. I'm putting together a book. I'm collecting 100 stories about the paranormal. If you have had a unique experience, or there's something that's happened in the family, I'd love for you to send me the story, because you'll be given credit for it in the book. But I'm aiming for this because I think the more we can share our experiences, the more it is going to make a difference in the lives of other people. So if you've had communication with animals, if you have had ghostly appearances that have occurred in your life that have made a difference, all of these things are so very important. And send them to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. And be sure to put in the subject line, story for Donna's book, or something like that. So, and put on the high importance little signal so that I will know that it's there. I have so many emails I've got to go through. Having had such an intense schedule these past 3 weekends, they have really added up. So do highlight it for me so that I will know that your story is there. Now, coming up this week, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about bankruptcy, how to survive and prosper. Leanne Ryan is going to be my guest. Bankruptcy is, just the mere thought of it, gives anybody the shivers. It's the last thing you want to go through. But Leanne had that experience, and she said you can turn things around. So we're going to be hearing her story, and sometimes life happens, but how you handle it makes a difference. So Leanne is going to give us some wonderful information on that. Then we're going to be talking with Kathy Lynn about voices of change, people who have dared to step up to the plate of opportunity, saying, yes, I am willing to do what's necessary to move along with my life. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Barb Owens, The Survivorship Net. Now, this is a very special publication. Lance Armstrong was an inspiration for it, as well as the author himself. Barb Owens is the wife of the author, and we're going to find out about this phenomenal story. So we have a dynamic week, and I do hope that you will join us. And by the way, if you have a special tip or something that you think people should know about, I would love to have you send it to me. Again, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Now, there are some things that I came across in the way of details about people. Do you sometimes wish you could read people a little bit better? Well, there are so many things about body language and various aspects. If you're into palmistry, there's a lot of things that can tell you. Body language can tell you a lot. There are many, many things. But here are a few points that I thought were just a lot of fun to read, and I thought you might enjoy them as well. If someone is left-handed, it shows creativity. Now, what they found in research, it's absolutely amazing. Left-handed people typically like to become musicians, writers, or artists. In fact, one study that was done found 47% of all the art students at a particular university were left-handed. Now, they asked the question, why is this? This is really not something we expected. Apparently, because of the use of the left hand, their brains are structured a little differently, with the two hemispheres more closely connected, and that enables them to be more expressive. So, just test it out sometime. These things are fun, because then you'll go, I wonder if that person's involved in music. They're left-handed. Are they autistic? Try these things out. It's fun. Now, people whose names begin with an A or a B, with the letter A or the letter B, tend to get higher grades than people with a name starting with a C, D, or an F. Don't ask me what study was done on that one. I don't know. But that is interesting. The first letter of your name. Fun thing to find out. And if a person has a lot of hair, I just love this one, it signals that they're intelligent. And Albert Einstein, you know how he had all that hair? Well, this is something that was done at the Chester Mental Health Center in Illinois. And I got such a kick out of this because there's members of Mensa. Now, this is an organization, if you're not familiar with this organization, they are people that have super high IQs. And they say, if a guy has a hairy chest, odds are he has a high IQ. Well, that should be an interesting study to do. And they said that the people that have high IQs tend to have more hair than other folks. And then there was another study that was done that students with more body hair even rank better academically. Now, they don't know why, but they think certain hormones associated with hair growth are also linked to mental function. That could be a lot of fun research. Oh, well. And then if someone has a big head, no, I mean actually literally, not just figuratively, that means that they've got a good memory. And again, this is research. You often wonder what these people do with most of their lives. Anyway, people with large skulls tend to have better memories, especially as they get older. They did a survey on 215 people between the ages of 75 and 80 who took an IQ and memory test, and the ones with the largest head circumference scored much better. I wonder what happens when they do this with 20-year-olds. Okay, so anyway, they tested them 3 years later, and they find yes. Now, Canadian research? Here's my question answered. They said younger folks with wide heads have higher IQs than those with smaller ones, and one study found that the larger the skull, the lower the risk of Alzheimer's. Scientists say skull size is directly related to brain volume, which in turn is linked to mental ability. I've known a few people that had big heads, but I couldn't say they had that much mental ability. They might have been, I don't know if they were so brilliant. They just had a big head, but they didn't have a lot of common sense that seemed to go along with it. Oh, well, I guess they just didn't research some of the people I knew. Now, a long ring finger. Yes, and those of you that have long ring fingers, well, they found that people with a long ring finger, longer than their index finger, tend to be more assertive and more likely to take risks. And guess what? They're good at investments. That's right. So check out your fingers. If your ring finger is longer than your index finger, hey, you could make money in the stock market because you're going to figure things out. And they're 6 times more money-oriented than their shorter-fingered counterparts, and they can think and make decisions more quickly. Apparently, the people that have the higher testosterone levels, the hormone responsible for ongoing traits for being more assertive, this is related to the length of that finger. Interesting stuff. And oh, for you redheads, well, I'll tell you what. Remember when they used to talk about redheads having tempers? Well, they now know that if you have red hair, it signals sensitivity. Sensitivity to pain, that is. Natural redheads are more sensitive to cold temperatures and discomfort, and typically they need 20% more pain medication and 20% more anesthesia during surgery to feel the same results that other people feel that are brunettes, blondes, or gray-haired. Turns out the gene responsible for the red hair is linked to how acutely the body perceives pain and temperature. So you're very sensitive individuals. Well, I know it's a lot of trivia, but I just thought I would share that with you today. There is so much different information that crosses my desk, and some of it's fun and some of it's a little frivolous, but I get a lot of good detailed information on computers and if you're wanting to do business, how you can use technology. And it's very convenient form at this time. And you know this stuff is changing so fast. I'm absolutely amazed. Think about what my guest was talking about with China. You go 1 year and you've got a road going in one direction. The next year, bingo. Because they have the volume of people to work with, they now are in an economic positioning where they can make these changes sort of on a dime. It's amazing how change is occurring, and it's really tough many times to keep up with a lot of this information. I got some information on cloud computing, and I thought, what's cloud computing? Well, I'm having to be educated on that. Using laptops, notebooks, netbooks, smartphones, how can we utilize this? Well, I've got some information that I'll be sharing with you sometime this week about that. Meanwhile, I do know we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Life is an exciting journey, and I want you to be able to enjoy who you are and what you're doing, realizing that if you're wanting change to manifest in your life, you have an opportunity to do exactly that. But it's going to be up to you to put it into place. Going to be up to you to initiate the thought, the plan, and then the action. This is Donna Siebel. Wherever you are, have a fabulous day, and remember always that we've got more good things to share with you here on the Donna Siebel Show. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.